Daniel chapter 4, the book of Daniel and chapter 4. While you're turning there, don't forget that 2 weeks from today, Brother John Buchanan has made application for membership, and he will be giving his testimony, after which he will be baptized, after which we will vote on his membership. And so if you have any tough questions for him, please let him know. Now, you know you have to be completely baptized. What are we going to do about your hand? What's that? You'll wrap it in something? I thought you were going to leave it up out of the water or something like that. So, okay. Yeah. All right, looking forward to that. But just so you as members know that if you have any questions for him, that you see him. Looking forward to hearing his testimony. Look at verse 37 of Daniel chapter 4. Here's Nebuchadnezzar's testimony at the very end, just the last part of verse 37. Those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. Wow. You know, Peter wrote this in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. And that is well illustrated by Nebuchadnezzar. He is a striking example of how God deals with the proud. Daniel chapters 3 through 6, rather than dealing with direct prophecies, are historical in nature. Actually, Daniel 1 through 6. And these chapters at the very beginning of this book describe the moral conditions during the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon and his successors in the times of the Gentiles. And so that's what we face today. We are in the times of the Gentiles, just as then. And even Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 3 created an image, probably of himself, and demanded that people bow down to him. And I think that foreshadows the great tribulation when all men will have to bow to the image that the Antichrist creates. And in chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar is given a lesson. In fact, he says this in chapter 3, verse 29, there is no other God that can deliver after this sort, after Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are delivered through that fiery furnace. And Nebuchadnezzar acknowledges, he admits, he confesses, there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. And then he even promotes Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in verse 30 of chapter 3. Which really seems to be nothing but lip service to the God of heaven. Because now you get to chapter 4, and I read verse 37, but let's read the first three verses of Daniel chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell on all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the God, the high God, hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. Now, you would think, wow, this guy's on the verge of, you know, being converted. Listen to what he's saying here. But then you read the rest of the chapter, and we see how God deals with this man who is extremely proud, very arrogant. And so I want us to jump all the way down to verse 28 of chapter 4, and then I'm going to be referring back to previous verses in this chapter as we note something about this proud man. And so I want to look at it this way. This is God's warning to this proud man. In verses 28 to 30, I want you to note the proud person's reflection. Look at verse 28. All this came upon the king, Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? Wow. When you read somebody who's proud and how they brag on themselves with the eyes and the my's and the very narcissistic vision that he has of himself. But I want you to jump back to verse 4 as we look at his reflection, the proud person's reflection, and look at what is said in verse 4. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace. Wow, he was doing so well. Then in verses 5 through 7, although we're not going to read these verses, he dreams a troubling dream and nobody can interpret this dream. This one he remembers because he relates it in verses 10 to 18, but he does not know the interpretation. Look at the last part of verse 18. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, that's Daniel. That's the Babylonian name for Daniel. Declare the interpretation thereof, for as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation. But thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. So he doesn't know the interpretation. But again, we find out that Nebuchadnezzar is in his own dream. This time, not as a metallic image, chapter 2, but a magnificent tree. Look at verse 22. It is thou, O king, Daniel is interpreting his dream, thou art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. Wow, this is an empire. This is the Babylonian empire. It stretches to the end of the earth, to the then known world. Nebuchadnezzar is a great man, and he knows it. So he's reflecting upon his greatness. So in verses 8 to 9, he had appealed to Daniel for an interpretation. So Daniel tells his dream and how it's interpreted. Again, King Nebuchadnezzar relates his dream in verses 10 to 17. But in verse 12, I want you to notice how beneficial he is to living creatures. He's relating his own dream and he says, verse 12, the leaves thereof were fair. This is of this tree. The fruit thereof much, and then it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it. The fowls of the heaven dwelt in its, and the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. A magnificent tree. A magnificent tree. Did he have something to brag about? Well, really, he did. But typically, a Christian doesn't brag on himself. He brags on. Amen. Brags on God. This reminds me of the city, the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11, 4, where they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And again, this typifies the end of the age. This typifies today. Let us, in this world, make us a name. Let's do something. Let's build us a tower to heaven. You're seeing how in today's world we are breaking down all the barriers and all the fences between people, trying to become a one world type system. And I believe that's what the Tower of Babylon foreshadows. I believe that's what this foreshadows, so that there can be this empire ruled by one man. Here it's King Nebuchadnezzar. But again, look at his attitude in verses 29 to 30 that we just read. And we're not going to read it again, but note that. And note the personal pronouns that he uses there. And then note what Daniel later says to this king's successor, either his son or his grandson, in chapter 5, verse 18. This is when Belshazzar, reads the handwriting on the wall. And here's what Daniel says to him. It says in verse 17, Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts go to yourself, and then I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. Verse 18, O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom. So he's referring back to what we're seeing in verse chapter 4. Thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. Again, in verse 18, who gave Nebuchadnezzar all that? God clearly gave it to him. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive, and whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this. Unbelievable. You would think that those who succeeded him would always be told the story of how Father Nebuchadnezzar or Grandfather Neb and what he did and what happened to him. In fact, it's Belshazzar's wife who says, you can't find anybody to interpret the handwriting on the wall. Don't you remember there was a guy in your father's kingdom who was able to interpret dreams? She's the one who points out there was a guy who was able to do it. But we see, first of all, the proud person's reflection. Secondly, verses 31 to 33 of chapter 4, we see the proud person's resistance. Well, who would resist a proud person? And what's going to happen if somebody resists the proud person? You may resist the proud person, so what? But I tell you something, if God resists the proud person, you better watch out. And we just read at the very beginning, 1 Peter 5:5, God resisteth the proud. And we see it happen right here because he goes from palace to pasture. He goes insane. And his humiliation extends further than just being chopped down. Not only is he chopped down as that magnificent tree that he is in his own dream, he begins to eat grass like an ox. That I don't understand. But I believe it. Somehow, this wonderful, arrogant, mighty king is out in the pasture licking up grass like an ox would. That's how humiliated he is. Three times it says, till you know. God is going to do this to him until he knows something. Go back to chapter 4, verse 17. This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones to the intent. Those three words, to the intent, that the living may know that the Most High ruleth. Jump down to verse 25. Look for the words, the three words, till thou know. Let me read it now. That they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. And they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee. Here we are. Till thou know that the Most High ruleth. It's given again in verse 32. Give you a second to find the three words, until thou know. Now let me read verse 32. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee until thou know. That too reminds me of the Tower of Babylon. You know what happened. They had said, go to, let us go down. This is what God is saying. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and he left off to build the city. Babylon was completely humiliated. Excuse me, Babel. No accident that Babylon is where Babel was located. Completely humiliated. I don't know how many of you remember Saddam Hussein and where they found him, our army. In a hole. There was a man who went from the palaces to beneath the pasture, a true successor of Nebuchadnezzar, Saddam Hussein, groveling in a pit trying to hide from the American army. So we see the proud person's reflection, the proud person's resistance. But now here's something that doesn't take place too often. It's the proud person's restoration. Two things about his restoration. The restoration of his reason. Look at verses 34 and 35. at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, now it's in the first person again. I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me. This is his restoration of reason. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he, that is God, doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? He is not destroyed, but he is humbled to such a degree that the only way he can look is up. And that's exactly what he does there in verse 34. And his understanding returns. Look again at verse 36. At the same time, my reason returned. Here's the restoration of his reason. And he understands God is the one who rules. God is the one who's in control. The majesty and the might that I had before, it all came from God. He gave it to me. His reasoning is returning. You are unreasonable anytime you think that what you do is due to your own greatness. You're about to be knocked down, not just a few notches, but a lot of notches. Not only is the restoration of his reason, verses 34 and 35, but in verse 36, the restoration of his splendor. At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Not only was he elevated back to his position, but to a greater position than he's ever had. Would you say that God's method of dealing with the proud was effective? Now I want you to compare verse 30 with verse 37. Verse 30, the king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? There's his boast. Now compare that to verse 37. I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Wow. Here's a striking example of God's dealing with the proud. Here's a man who, when God humbled him, he responded. You cannot be a proud man and be saved. Jesus said, unless you become like one of these little children, he's talking about humility, unless you humble yourselves like a little child, you cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. It is possible to humble yourself like a little child because God has a way of doing that, as he did with King Nebuchadnezzar. It's kind of interesting. This is the last we know of this Nebuchadnezzar, and then he dies. Was he converted? I tend to think he was. When you see what he says, I believe he may have been. His son, this king's son, not Belteshazzar, but his son, evil Merodach, we believe was the one who was the emperor of Babylon, if you say so, who had this unaccounted for kindness to King Jehoiakim, and allowed that king of Judah to be elevated in the land of Judah. And all it says is that he was exalted. That this king's son, Nebuchadnezzar's son, exalted this king of Judah. And I wonder if it's not due to the fact that his dad was a believer. We don't know. But we do know this, everybody will one day be brought to the attitude given in Philippians 2, 10 and 11, that at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Listen to this man's testimony and remember it as we go. Those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. You know, there are some who exalt themselves. As Jesus gave the parable, when he was noting how that the Pharisees took the high seats at the supper, and he said, you know what's going to happen? The guy who puts himself at the head of the table is going to be humbled. He said, therefore, start at the low end of the table and let someone else exalt you. Because you'll be put down to the lowest part of the table if you exalt yourself.